is you sleep too much. Anyone would look like that if they slept 14 hours a day, Colette said disdainfully. I have to sleep 14 hours a day because of my chronic fatigue syndrome. Another disease you do not have, Mother. Chronic fatigue syndrome does not make you sleepy, Colette said. Well, I am going to see a specialist for mayonnaise Athena gravies next week in Singapore.
Colette rolled her eyes and explained to Rachel and Nick. My mother keeps 90% of all the doctors in Asia employed. Well, she's probably seen quite a few of my relatives then, Nick quipped. Mrs. Bing perked up.
Who are your doctor relatives?
Let's see. The one you might know is my Uncle Dicky, Richard Sien. He's a GP who has many society clients. No? Then there's his brother, Mark Sien, an ophthalmologist. My cousin, Charles Shang, a hematologist. My other cousin, Peter Leong, a neurologist. Mrs. Bing gasped.
Dr. Leong? Who shares a clinic in KL with his wife, Gladys?
Yes, that's him.
Ayah, small world. I went to see him when I thought I had a brain tumor. And then I went to see Gladys for a second opinion.
Mrs. Bing began rattling away excitedly to her husband in a Chinese dialect that Nick couldn't recognize. Jack, who had been listening to Richie describe the special off-road vehicle he was designing with Ferrari, immediately circled back to Nick.
Peter Leong is your cousin. So Harry Leong must be your uncle?
Yes, he is. Now he thinks I'm a Leong. My market value is rebounding again. Jack eyed Nick with renewed interest. My God, this boy is one of the Leong palm oil people, ranked number 3 on the Herenth Wealth Reports list of richest families in Asia. No wonder he can afford to be a teacher.
Is your mother a Leong?
Jack asked excitedly.
No, she's not. Harry Leong married my father's sister.
I see, Jack said. Family name Young. Never heard of them. This kid must come from the poor side of the family.
Mrs. Bing leaned toward Nick. What other doctors are in your family?
Do you know Dr. Malcolm Cheng, the Hong Kong cardiologist?
Oh my God! Another one of my doctors,
Mrs. Bing said excitedly.
I went to see him for my irregular heartbeat. I thought maybe I had microvalve relapse, but it turned out I just needed to drink less Starbucks.
Richie, who was getting increasingly bored of all the doctor talk, turned to Colette. When's dinner?
It's almost ready. My Cantonese chef is making her famous parchment chicken with white truffles.
A delicacy where chicken pieces are mixed with a hoisin sauce and 5-spice garnish, wrapped envelope-style into square packets of parchment paper and left to marinate overnight. White truffles, an ingredient not normally found in classical Cantonese cuisine, are an extra touch of decadence added by the Bing's wildly ambitious chef. The packets are then deep-fried, allowing the delicious marinade to caramelize onto the chicken. Finger-licking good.
Yum!
And as a special treat, I've also asked my French chef to make your favorite Grand Marnier souffle for dessert, Colette added.
You sure know the way to a man's heart, don't you?
Only certain men,
Colette said, lifting one eyebrow.
Rachel glanced at Carlton to see how he was reacting to this exchange, but he seemed to be staring intently at his iPhone. He then looked up and nodded quickly at Colette, who caught his gesture but said nothing. Rachel couldn't decipher what was going on between them. Wolseley soon announced that dinner was ready, and the party adjourned to the dining room, which was a glassed-in terrace, up a short flight of steps overlooking the big reflecting pool.
It's just a casual family dinner tonight, so I thought we could dine informally on our little air-conditioned terrace, Colette explained.
Of course, the terrace was neither little nor informal. Lining the perimeter of the tennis court-sized space were tall silver hurricane votive lamps filled with flickering candles, and the round Zetan wood dining table that seated 8 was elaborately set with casual Nymphenburg china. Maids stood at attention behind every chair, waiting as if their life depended on it, to help ensure that each guest could properly manage the feat of sitting down.
Now, before we start dinner, I have a special treat for everyone,
Colette announced. She glanced at Wosley and nodded. The lights were dimmed, and the first strains of the classic Chinese folk song Jasmine Flower began to boom from the outdoor loudspeakers. The trees around the great reflecting pool outside suddenly lit up in brilliant shades of emerald, and the waters of the pool, lit in deep purple, started to churn. Then, as the operatic singing began, thousands of water jets shot up into the night sky, choreographed to the music and morphing into elaborate formations and a rainbow riot of colors.
My goodness! It's just like the Bellagio dancing fountain in Las Vegas!
Mrs. Bing squealed in delight.
When did you have this put in?
Jack asked his daughter.
They've been working on it in secret for months. I wanted it to be ready in time for my summer garden party with Pan Ting Ting,
Colette proudly explained.
All this just to impress Pan Ting Ting?
Nonsense, I did this for Mother.
And how much is this costing me?
Oh, it was much less than you might think. Only around 20 bucks.
Colette's father sighed, shaking his head in resignation. Nick and Rachel exchanged looks. They knew that among the wealthy Chinese, bucks meant millions. Colette turned to Rachel.
Do you like it?
It's spectacular, and whoever is singing sounds a lot like Celine Dion,
Rachel said.
It is Celine. It's her famous duet in Mandarin with Song Juying, Colette said.
As the water spectacle ended, a line of maids entered the dining terrace, each bearing an antique meissen platter. The lights came on again, and in perfect unison, the maids placed a platter of parchment chicken in front of each dinner guest. Everyone began undoing their parchments, which had been adorably knotted in butcher's twine, and tantalizing aromas came seeping out of the golden brown paper. As Nick was about to take his first bite into the succulent-looking chicken thigh, he spied the trusty Roxanne creep up to Colette and whisper something into her ear. Colette grinned broadly and nodded. She looked across the table at Rachel and said,
I have one final surprise for you.
Rachel saw Bao Gao Liang coming up the stairs to the dining room. Everyone at the table rose in deference to the high-ranking minister. Gasping in delight, Rachel got up from her seat to greet her father. Bao Gao Liang looked just as surprised to see Rachel. He hugged her warmly, much to Carlton's astonishment. He had never seen his father display physical affection for anyone like that before. Not even his mother.
I am so sorry to interrupt your dinner. I was in Beijing a few hours ago, and I suddenly got strong-armed by these two conspirators and put onto a plane,
Gao Liang said, gesturing toward Carlton and Colette.
No interruption at all. It is an honor to have you here with us, Bao Buzang.
Mandarin for minister, the correct form of address for a high-ranking official.
Jack Bing said, getting up and patting Gao Liang on the back. This calls for a celebration. Where's Betty's? We need some very special tiger bone wine.
Yes, tiger power for everyone, Richie cheered, getting up to shake Bao Gao Liang's hand.
That was a very insightful speech you gave last week about the dangers of monetary inflation, Ling Dao.
Mandarin for boss, the correct form of address for really sucking up to a high-ranking official.
Oh, were you there?
Bao Gao Liang asked.
No, I watched it on CCTV. I'm a politics junkie.
Well, I'm glad some of you younger generation pay attention to this country's affairs, Gao Liang said, casting a sideways glance at Carlton.
I only pay attention when I feel like our leaders are being on the level with me. I don't watch any of the speeches that are all hype or rhetoric.
Carlton had to resist rolling his eyes. A place setting next to Rachel was swiftly arranged for Gao Liang, and Colette graciously gestured.
Bao Buzang, please, do sit down.
I'm sorry to see that Mrs. Bao couldn't join us. Is she still held up in Hong Kong? Rachel asked.
Yes, unfortunately. But she sends her regards, Gao Liang said quickly.
Carlton let out a snort. Everyone at the table looked at him momentarily. Carlton looked like he was about to say something, but then he changed his mind and chucked a full glass of Montrachet in several quick gulps. As the meal resumed, Rachel filled her father in on everything they had done since arriving in Shanghai, while Nick chatted amiably with the Bings and Richie Yang. Nick was relieved that Bao Gaoliang had finally shown up, and he could see how excited Rachel was to spend time with him. But he couldn't help noticing that a few seats away, Carlton sat stone-faced while Colette seemed to be getting more and more agitated as each course was served. What's the deal? Both of them looked like they could spontaneously combust at any moment. Suddenly, while everyone was in the midst of savoring the Lancho-style hand-pulled noodles with lobster and abalone, Colette put down her chopsticks and whispered into her father's ear. The two of them abruptly got up.
"Please, excuse us for a moment," Colette said with a forced smile.
Colette marched her father downstairs, and as soon as they were out of earshot, she began to scream.
"What is the point of hiring the best butler in England to teach you proper manners when you just won't learn? You were slurping your noodles so loudly it made my teeth ache. And the way you spit out your bones onto the table, my God, Christian Liagre would have a heart attack if he knew what was happening on his beautiful table. And how many times have I told you not to kick your shoes off when we are dining with company? Don't lie to me. I could smell something from a mile away, and I know it wasn't the snow pea shoot simmered in stinky tofu."
Jack laughed at his daughter's tantrum. "I am the son of a fisherman. I keep telling you, you cannot change me. But don't worry. It doesn't matter how good my manners are. As long as this remains fat." He patted the wallet in his back pocket. "Even in China's best dining rooms, no one will care if I spit on the table."
"Rubbish! Everyone can change. Look how well Mother's doing. She hardly chews with her mouth open anymore. And she wields her chopsticks like an elegant Shanghainese lady."
Colette's father shook his head in amusement. "Ay-ya, I really pity that idiot Richie Yang. He doesn't know what he's getting himself into."
"What on earth do you mean?"
"Don't try to deceive your own father. Your plan of dangling Carlton Bao in front of Richie has paid off like a charm. I have a feeling he's planning to propose to you any day now."
"That's ridiculous," Colette said,
still fuming at her father's negligent etiquette.
"Really?
Then why did he beg his way onto my plane to ask my permission for your hand in marriage?"
"How silly of him. I hope you told him exactly where he could stuff that proposal."
"Actually, I gave Richie my blessing. I think it will be a brilliant match, not to mention that I will finally be able to stop fighting over companies with his father." Jack grinned, flashing the crooked incisor that Colette was constantly begging him to get fixed.
"Don't start getting any fantasies of mergers, Dad, because I have no interest in marrying Richie Yang."
Jack laughed, and then he said in a low whisper,
"Silly girl, I never asked if you were interested in marrying him. Your interest is not my concern."
Then he turned and headed back upstairs. Chapter 11. Corinna and Kitty, Hong Kong.
"She's late again."
Corinna stood fuming by the revolving doors outside Glory Tower. She had specifically told Kitty to arrive no later than 10:30, but it was now almost 11.
"I'm going to have to give her my punctuality lecture. The one I haven't had to use since working with that Burmese family in 2002.
Corinna thought, as she nodded politely at all the nicely dressed people rushing past her into the building. A few minutes later, Kitty's modest new pearl-white Mercedes S-Class sedan pulled up at the curb, and Kitty emerged from the car. Corinna jabbed at her watch anxiously, and Kitty quickened her pace across the plaza. At least Kitty had diligently followed her advice in the appearance department and gone with the complicated updo, the overly whitened face, and the burlesque red lipstick. In their place, the immaculately transformed Kitty only had a dusting of blush on her cheeks, a light apricot gloss on her lips, and a relaxed mane of chestnut-highlighted hair cut 4 inches shorter. She wore a baby chicken yellow Carolina Herrera dress with silk veil puff sleeves, low-heeled beige pumps of indeterminate brand, and a simple Givenchy green crocodile clutch, with her only jewelry being a pair of pearl stud earrings and a dainty diamond sideways cross necklace by Iliana Makri. The overall effect rendered her virtually unrecognizable.
"You're very late. Now we will be noticed when we enter, as opposed to blending in with the crowd," Corinna scolded.
"I'm sorry. This whole church thing has got me so nervous. I changed 6 times. Does this look okay?"
Kitty asked, readjusting the pleats on her skirt. Corinna scrutinized her for a moment.
"The cross might be overdoing it a bit for your first visit, but I will let it pass. Otherwise, it looks quite appropriate. You no longer remind me of Daphne Guinness."
"The church is inside this office building?"
Kitty asked, a little confused as they entered the peach marble-clad lobby of Glory Tower.
"I told you, this is a very special church," Corinna replied as they went up an escalator to the main reception hall.
There, a greeting table draped with ruffled blue bunting was manned by a trio of teenage greeters and several security guards. An American girl with a headset and an iPad came bounding toward them with a big toothy grin.
"Good morning. Are you joining us for the main service or the Seekers class?"
"The main service," Corinna answered.
"Your names, please?"
"Corinna Kotung and Kitty, I mean, Catherine Tai," Corinna replied, using the name Kitty had used before she became a soap opera star.
The girl scrolled through her iPad and said,
"I'm sorry. I don't see you on the list for Sunday services."
"Oh, I forgot to mention. We're guests of Helen Mok Espray."
"Okay. Yes, I see you here. Helen Mok Espray +2.
A female security guard approached and presented each of them with lanyards with freshly printed name badges attached in plastic sleeves. Printed in a vibrant purple font were the words, "Stratosphere Church, Sunday Worship, Guest of Helen Mok Espray," followed by the church's motto in italics, "Communing with Christ at a higher level."
"Put these on and take the first elevator up to the 45th floor," the guard instructed.
When Kitty and Corinna reached the 45th floor, another greeter with a headset stood waiting to escort them to an elevator bank across the hall, this one taking them up to the 79th floor.
"We're almost there. Just one more set of elevators," Corinna said as she straightened the collar on Kitty's dress.
"Are we going all the way to the top?"
"The very top.
See, I told you to be early precisely because it takes 15 minutes just to get up there."
"All this trouble for a church,"
Kitty grumbled.
"Kitty, you are about to enter the most exclusive church in Hong Kong. Stratosphere was started by the billionaire Pentecostal Siu sisters and is strictly by invitation. Not only is it the highest church in the world, at 99 stories above the earth, but it boasts more members on the South China Morning Post rich list than any other private club on the island."
With that introduction, the elevator doors opened onto the 99th floor, and Kitty was momentarily blinded by the light. She found herself standing in the apex of the tower under a soaring atrium, its cathedral-like ceilings constructed almost entirely of glass, flooding the space with intense sunlight. Kitty wanted to put on her sunglasses, but she suspected this would elicit another scolding from Corinna. The next thing to assault her senses was the blaring rock music. As they took a seat in one of the back rows, Kitty saw hundreds of worshippers with their hands raised and waving in unison as they sang along to the Christian rock band. The band was made up of a strapping blonde lead singer who could have passed for a Hemsworth brother, a Chinese female drummer with a buzz cut, another white guy on bass guitar, 3 college-aged Chinese girls singing backup, and a scrawny teenage Chinese boy
in a green Izod shirt, three sizes too big, pounding away frantically on a Yamaha keyboard. Everyone sang.
Jesus Christ, come into me. Jesus Christ, come fill me up.
Kitty took in the whole spectacle with childlike awe. None of this was anything like what she ever imagined a Christian church service to be. The celestial light, the thumping music, the hunky rock god on stage, and best of all, the view. From her seat, she had a jaw-dropping bird's-eye view of Hong Kong Island, from Pacific Place Mall in Admiralty, all the way to North Point. If this wasn't heaven on earth, what was? She took out her phone and began snapping a few covert pictures. She had never seen the top of 2IFC up close before.
What on earth do you think you're doing? Put that away! You're in the house of God!
Corinna hissed into her ear. Kitty put away her phone, red-faced, but whispered to Corinna.
You lied to me. Look how everyone is dressed to the nines except me.
Kitty said, pointing to the young woman in the front row in a white Chanel suit, the three enormous Bulgari gemstone rings on her fingers sparkling brightly as she waved her arms back and forth.
She's the pastor's wife. She's entitled to dress like that. But as a new visitor, you can't.
Kitty was aggravated at first, but as she gazed at the gigantic cumulus clouds in the crisp azure sky, with the roar of the catchy chorus in her ears, and everyone around her singing their guts out, she began to feel strange new emotions stirring within. The dapper guy in the houndstooth jacket and tight Saint Laurent jeans next to her was screeching off-key.
Everything I need is right here, Jesus! Everything I need!
Tears of joy streaming down his face. She found it strangely sexy to see this young hipster crying so openly. After half an hour of singing, the blonde lead singer, who turned out to be the pastor, said to the congregation in an American accent,
"It fills me with so much joy to see all your bright, happy faces today. Let's share the love. Let's share the joy by passing it along to the person next to you. How about that?"
Before Kitty knew what was happening, the crying hipster turned to her and gave her a big bear hug. Then the middle-aged Tai Tai in front of her turned around and embraced her warmly. Kitty was stunned. Hong Kongers hugging each other? How was this possible? And not just one or two friends who knew each other. Perfect strangers were hugging each other and introducing themselves. This was a miracle. My God, if this was what it was like to be a Christian, she wanted in right now. When the service finally concluded, Corinna turned to Kitty. "At last, time for coffee and cake. Follow me."
"I don't want to spoil my appetite. Aren't we going to Cuisine for lunch?"
"Kitty, the whole reason I brought you here is so you can socialize with these people over coffee and cake. This is the main event. Many of the members are the younger generation of Hong Kong old guard families, and this is the best chance you have of getting to know them. They will be much more accepting of you because they are born-again Christians."
"Born again? How can you be born twice?"
"Hiya, I'll explain later. But the important thing you need to know about being a born-again Christian is that once you repent and accept Jesus into your heart, you are forgiven for all your sins, no matter what they are. Whether you murdered your parents, slept with your stepson, or embezzled millions to fund your singing career, these people have to forgive you. Now, what I hope to accomplish today is to get you into one of the Bible study fellowships. The group that everyone wants to join is Helen Mok Espres. But it's a very close circle of only the top ladies. To begin with, I would aim for the group led by my niece, Justina Wei. It's a younger crowd, and there are quite a few girls from good families in that one. Justina's paternal grandfather, Wei Ra Min, started Yummy Cup Noodles. So everyone calls her the instant noodle heiress. Kitty was steered toward a moon-faced woman in her early 30s.
She couldn't believe that this person dressed in a secretary-like navy pantsuit was the noodle heiress she had heard so much about.
Justina! Hiya! Kom ngoi mo kin!
Cantonese for long time no see.
Meet my friend, Catherine Tai.
Hello. Are you related to Stephen Tai?
Justina asked, immediately trying to place Kitty on her social map.
No.
Justina, who was usually only comfortable talking to people she knew from birth, was forced to resort to her default question.
So, which school did you go to? I didn't go to school in Hong Kong,
Kitty responded, a little flustered. Justina's long, frizzy, limp hair reminded her of instant noodles. She wondered what would happen if you poured boiling water over them and let them sit for 3 minutes.
Catherine went to school abroad,
Corinna quickly interjected.
Oh, is this your first time worshipping with us?
Justina cocked her head.
Yes. Well then, welcome to Stratosphere. Which church do you normally attend?
Kitty tried to think of all the churches she passed every single day on the way down from her apartment on the peak. But her mind temporarily went blank.
The Church of Volturi,
she blurted out, picturing the church-like space from the Twilight movies where those scary old vampires sat on thrones.
Oh, I don't know that one. Is it over on Kowloon side?
Yes, it is, Corinna said, coming to the rescue again. I really must introduce Catherine, to Helen Mok Esprey. I see Helen already grabbing the flowers from the church altar, so I know she's about to leave.
Pulling Kitty off to the side, Corinna said, My God, that was an utter disaster. What is wrong with you today? Where is the girl who charmed the socks off Evangeline de Ayala?
Sorry, I don't know what's happening. I guess I'm just not used to all this, my new name, pretending to be a Christian, dressing this way. Without my normal makeup or proper jewelry, I feel like I don't have my armor on. People always used to ask me about what I was wearing, and now I can't even talk about that.
Corinna shook her head in dismay.
You're an actress. It's time you put your improv skills to the test.
Just think of it as playing a new role.
Remember, you are no longer the evil twin sister. You are the good wife now. You spend all your time taking care of your invalid husband and your young daughter. And this is the only time all week you get to socialize with people. So you must be animated and grateful. Now let's try again with Helen Mok Esprey. Helen was born a Mok, divorced a Quek, and is now married to Sir Harold Esprey. You should address her as Lady Esprey.
Corinna steered Kitty toward the hospitality table, where a woman with an enormous coiffed helmet of hair was furtively wrapping up 6 enormous slices of black forest cake in paper napkins and stuffing them into a big black Oraton handbag.
Helen, thank you so much for putting us on your list today, Corinna chirped.
Helen jumped a little.
Oh, hi.
Corinna, I'm just taking home a little bit of cake for Harold. You know what a sweet tooth he has.
Yes, Harold's just like you when it comes to sweets, isn't he? Before you leave, I wanted to introduce my guest, Catherine Tai. Catherine used to belong to the Volturi Church in Kowloon, but she's thinking of changing.
I love your church. Thank you so much for inviting us today, Lady Esprey,
Kitty said sweetly.
Helen looked Kitty up and down.
What a lovely little cross that is,
she complimented, before turning to Corinna and saying sotto voce. I had one very similar to that, but I think one of the new maids stole it. Those new girls from you know where are just so untrustworthy.
My God, I miss my Norma and Nettie. You know I paid them so well that now they've abandoned me to start a beach bar in Cebu.
A lady, chicly attired in a celadon-colored A-line dress, came up to the table with 2 carafes freshly refilled with coffee.
My goodness! What happened to all the cake? I guess I have to go down to the kitchen again, she sighed.
Ophie, before you run off, meet my friend Catherine Tai.
Catherine, this is my cousin, Fiona Tung Cheng, Karina said.
Pleased to meet you, Catherine, Fiona said, before giving Kitty a more discerning look.
You look so familiar. Are you by any chance related to Stephen Tai?
They're distant cousins, Karina cut in, trying to stop her from asking more questions.
Kitty smiled calmly at Fiona and said,
You know, I just adore your dress. Narciso Rodriguez, isn't it?
Why, yes, thank you, Fiona beamed. It wasn't often that anyone complimented her clothes.
I met him a few years ago, Kitty continued,
ignoring Karina's glare. She was going to talk about fashion at church, even if it gave Karina a stroke.
Really? You met Narciso? Fiona said.
Yes, I went to his fashion show in New York. Don't you think it's wonderful that a boy from a family of Cuban immigrants can become such a successful fashion designer? It's like the message of today's sermon. Anyone with a willing heart can be born again.
Helen Mok Espre beamed in approval. How true. My goodness, why don't you join my Bible study group? We could use another fresh young perspective like yours. Kitty's face lit up as Karina looked on like a proud mother. My God, Kitty had hit pay dirt on her very first try. Maybe Karina had misjudged her capabilities. At this rate, Kitty was bound to win the ladies over at Bible study and would be getting invited to all sorts of other old guard events by the time the festive season began. Just then, Eddie Ching came strolling over to his wife Fiona.
Are you done with your coffee duties yet?
Turning to Helen and Karina, he bragged.
We are expected to lunch at the Laduris, and it would be very bad form to be late.
I'm almost finished. I just need to make one more kitchen run for cake. It's disappeared so fast today. Eddie, meet Karina's friend, Catherine.
Eddie made an obligatory nod in Kitty's direction.
Help me with the cake and then we can get out of here faster, Fiona said.
Walking toward the kitchen with Eddie, she said,
That nice lady is going to join our Bible study. I love her dress. If only you would let me wear a bright color like that.
Eddie stared at Kitty again, suddenly narrowing his eyes.
What did you say her name was again?
Catherine Tai. She's a distant cousin of Stephen's.
Eddie snorted. Maybe on Mars they might be related, but here on Earth they certainly aren't. Take a good look at her, Fee.
Fiona stared searchingly at Kitty's face. Suddenly, she let out a gasp of recognition and dropped the empty metal cake tray onto the floor with a loud clang.
All eyes in the room were on them. Relishing the attention, Eddie made a beeline to where Karina, Kitty, and Helen were standing and announced smugly.
Karina, I know you have always tried to take on these charity cases, but this time you've really been had. This woman who's trying to pass herself off as Stephen Tai's cousin is an imposter. She's actually Kitty Pong, the gold digger who broke my brother Alistair's heart and eloped with Bernard Tai 2 years ago. Hello, Kitty.
Kitty lowered her eyes. Stung with hurt, she wasn't quite sure how to react. Why was she being called an imposter? None of this was her doing. Karina was the one who had told Fiona she was related to the Stephen person. She turned to Karina, hoping she would come to her defense, but the woman just stood there.
Helen Mok Espre glared at Kitty and said in a sharp voice, You're that Kitty Pong? Carol Tai is a good friend of mine. What have you done with her son? And why won't you let Carol see her own granddaughter? Gum Hak Sum.
Cantonese for so black-hearted.
Chapter 12. Astrid, Singapore.
Are you going for a run now?
Astrid asked Michael as he came downstairs in nothing but a pair of black Puma running shorts.
Yeah, I need to blow off some steam.
Don't forget, we have Friday night dinner in an hour.
I'll join you later.
We can't be late tonight. My Thai cousins, Adam and Pia, are visiting. and the Thai ambassador has arranged a special perform-
I don't give a fuck about your Thai cousins,
Michael snapped as he ran out the door.
He's still upset.
Astrid got up from the sofa and headed upstairs to her study. She logged onto Gmail and saw Charlie's name lit up.
Thank God.
She immediately pinged him. Astrid Leong Teo.
Still at work?
Charlie Wu. Yup. Never leave my office these days except for juice breaks.
ALT. Question for you. When you're in the midst of negotiating major deals with potential clients, do you also entertain them?
CW. What do you mean by entertain?
ALT. Do you take them out to business dinners?
CW. LOL. I thought you meant get them laid. Yes, there are always business dinners. More lunches, actually. We sometimes do a celebratory dinner when a deal closes. Why?
ALT. I'm just trying to educate myself. It's funny. I've had to deal with all kinds of social events with intricate protocols my whole life. But when it comes to the corporate dinner, I'm totally ignorant.
CW. Well, you've never had to be a corporate wife.
ALT. Does Isabel usually come to your work dinners?
CW. Isabel at a client dinner? Ha! Hell would freeze over. Client entertaining rarely involves spouses.
ALT. Even for international clients who are visiting Asia?
CW. When international clients come to Asia, they generally don't bring their wives. Back in my dad's time in the 1980s and 90s, yes, maybe, some wives wanted to come to Hong Kong or Singapore to shop, but not so much anymore. On the rare occasions that they do, we really try to roll out the red carpet so that clients can concentrate on work and not worry that their wives are getting ripped off at Stanley Market.
ALT. So you don't feel that a crucial component of deal-making involves a dinner with the wives?
CW. Not at all. These days, most of my clients are single 22-year-old monosyllabic Zuckerbergs, and many of them are women. What's up? I'm assuming Michael is trying to enlist your help with some clients?
ALT. It already happened.
CW.
So why are you asking?
ALT.
Well, it was a total disaster. The deal fell through, and guess who got the blame?
CW. Huh? Why would you get the blame for a botched deal? Last time I checked, you weren't his employee. Did you spill scalding hot bak kut teh onto the client's lap or something?
Literally translated as meat bone tea. This is not the name of a summer event on Fire Island, but rather a popular Singaporean soup that consists of melt-in-your-mouth pork ribs simmered for many hours in an intoxicatingly complex broth of herbs and spices.
ALT. It's a long story. Pretty funny, actually. I'll tell you about it when I see you in Hong Kong next month.
CW. Come on, you can't leave me hanging like this.
Astrid took her hands off the keyboard. For a moment, she debated whether to make some excuse and beg off, or to continue with her story. She didn't want to trash her husband to Charlie, knowing he already had a colored impression of Michael. But her need to vent got the better of her.
ALT.
Michael has apparently been cultivating these clients for a while, and the bigwig and his whole team flew in to finalize the deal. He brought his wife. So Michael asked me to organize a nice dinner someplace that would impress all of them. The couple are really into food. So I chose Andre.
CW. Not bad. For out-of-towners, I also like Waku Gin.
ALT.
I love Tetsuya's cooking, but I felt it wouldn't be right for this crowd. Anyway, for the first time ever, Michael was obsessing over what I wore to dinner. I had on what I felt to be the perfect outfit, but he wanted me to change into something more ostentatious.
CW.
But that's not your style.
ALT. I wanted to be a team player, so I wore this irresponsibly large pair of earrings, emeralds and diamonds that really should not be seen in public unless you're going to a state dinner at Windsor Castle or a wedding in Jakarta.
CW. Sounds amazing.
ALT. Well, it ended up being the wrong choice. We get to the restaurant late, and Michael insisted on driving his new vintage Ferrari and parking it right outside. So everyone is already staring at us as we walked in. Then it turns out the bigwig is from Northern California. Lovely low-key couple. The wife was chic, but in an understated way. She was wearing a beautiful tunic dress, strappy sandals, and these artsy earrings that some kid had made for her.
I looked outrageously overdressed by comparison, and it made everyone uncomfortable. Everything went south from there, and today Michael came home pretty upset. They nixed the whole deal.
CW.
And Michael blames you?
ALT. He blames himself more, but I do see it was partly my fault. I should have followed my gut and stuck to the first outfit. Truth be told, I was a little cheesed off that Michael was second-guessing my choice. So I really put my foot on the accelerator to up the bling quotient with the second outfit, but it was way too much, and it put off the client.
Astrid's phone started to ring, and she picked it up when she saw it was Charlie on the line. Astrid Leong, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Clients don't give a shit how the wives of their business partners are dressed, especially in the tech world. I'm sure there are many reasons why this deal did not work out, but trust me, your accessories had nothing to do with it. You see that, don't you?
I get what you're saying, and I agree, partly. But it was an unusual night and a strange confluence of events. You just had to be there.
Astrid, that's total BS. I'm mad at Michael that he would try to make you feel like you were in any way responsible.
Astrid sighed. I know I am not ultimately responsible. But I do see that if I had done things a little differently, the outcome might have been more positive. I'm sorry it's upset you. I didn't mean to do that. I guess I was just selfishly venting after Michael and I got into a fight. I feel bad for him, I really do. I know he worked so hard to try to get this deal off the ground.
Cry me a river.
Michael's company is still doing fantastic. His stock hasn't lost a single point over this, but he somehow managed to make you feel bad about it. And that's what worries me.
You just don't see how preposterous this whole line of reasoning is. You did nothing wrong, Astrid. Nothing.
Thank you for saying that. Hey, I gotta run. Cassian is screaming about something.
Hanging up the phone, Astrid closed her eyes and let the tears seep out. She didn't dare tell Charlie what Michael had really said when he came home that afternoon. He had come into Cassian's bedroom, where Astrid was crouched under the desk with three chairs barricading her in, and she was wearing the emerald earrings, pretending to be a captured Guinevere to Cassian's King Arthur.
Those goddamn earrings again! You lost me the biggest deal because of those earrings, Michael scoffed.
What on earth are you talking about? Astrid asked, peering out from her hiding place.
The deal fell through today. They weren't anywhere near my asking price.
I'm so sorry, hun. Astrid emerged from underneath the desk and tried to give him a hug, but he pulled away after a second. She followed him down the hallway to their bedroom. As Michael began changing out of his work clothes, he continued.
We really screwed up that client dinner. I don't blame you. I blame me. I was the fool who asked you to change. Apparently your look didn't go over so well with everyone.
Astrid couldn't believe her ears.
I don't understand why any of that would matter anyway. Who really cares what I was wearing?
In this business, perception is everything. And a crucial component of deal-making is the all-important client dinner with the wives.
I thought we had a lovely time. Wendy was raving about every dish, and we even swapped numbers.
Michael sat down on the bed and put his head in his hands for a moment.
Don't you see? It doesn't really matter what the wife thinks. I was trying to show the guys that I run the leading tech company in Singapore. That we are the blue chip choice, and we have the blue chip lifestyle to match it. And they needed to pay us what we're worth. But it all backfired.
Maybe you shouldn't have driven the Ferrari. Maybe that was too obvious, Astrid said.
No, that's not it. Everyone loved the Ferrari. What they didn't get was your style.
My style? Astrid said incredulously.
All this strange vintage stuff. No one gets it. Why can't you just wear Chanel once in a while like everyone else?
I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I think we need to make some big changes. I really need to revamp my image completely. People don't take me seriously because of how we live. They think, if he has one of the most successful tech companies in Asia, why doesn't he live in a bigger house? Why isn't he in the press more? Why does his wife still drive an Acura? And why doesn't she have better jewels?
Astrid shook her head in disbelief. Every serious jewelry collector knows about my family's collection.
That's part of the problem, hun. No one outside of a tiny inbred circle has even heard of your family because they are so goddamn private.
At dinner, my client couldn't imagine that those rambutan-sized rocks you had on were real. So instead of making you look more expensive, it looked like you were wearing cheap costume jewelry. Do you know what their general counsel told Silas Teo over drinks last night? He said that when we first walked into dinner, all the guys thought my date was some girl from Orchard Towers.
Orchard Towers? Astrid was confused.
That's where all the escorts work. With those boots and earrings you were wearing the other night. The guys thought you were a high-class whore.
Astrid stared at her husband, too stung to speak.
We need to go big or go home. I need to hire a new PR consultant, and you need a new look. And I think tomorrow you should call that MGS friend of yours, who is a realtor. What's her name again? Miranda.
You mean Carmen?
Yes, Carmen. Tell her we need to start looking at new houses. I want a place that will make everyone who comes over lao nua the moment they drive up.
Literally translates as dribble saliva in Hokkien. In other words, to drool over something with envy.
Chapter 13. Save the Seamstress Fashion Show, June 2013. Portofino Estates, Shanghai. NoblesseMagazine.com.cn. Society columnist Honey Chai live blogs from her front row seat as two of China's most influential fashion forces come together tonight for the worthiest of causes. 5:50 p.m. I've just arrived at heiress and fashion blogger Colette Bing's heavenly country estate, where she's hosting a very special fall fashion preview with her best friend, superstar Pan Ting Ting. This is the coveted invitation that only 300 of China's chicest have received. Prada Couture has flown in the most decadent looks from the top fashion houses in Europe. As Asia's top supermodels, including Du Juan and Liu Wen, strut the runway, the outfits will be auctioned off to benefit Save the Seamstress, a foundation started by Colette and Ting Ting that fights to improve working conditions for garment workers throughout Asia. 5:53 p.m.
As guests walk up the long pebble driveway to the house, a line of French waiters in black Napoleon collared jackets welcome us with French blonde cocktails.
St. Germain elderflower liqueur, gin and white lilac mixed with grapefruit juice create this classic effervescent aperitif. Chin chin.
Served in vintage Lalique stemware. Now that's class. 6:09 p.m.
This place resembles the Pooley Hotel, only much bigger. We are now inside the Bing Family Museum, and everywhere I look, I see Warhols,
Picassos, and Bacons, and standing in front of them are some of China's most fabulous living works of art.
Lester Liu and his wife Valerie in a va-va-voom vintage Christian Lacroix poof dress. Perennium Wang, sporting a Stephen Jones fascinator of glittery gold sun rays with a Sakai shredded dress. Stephanie Shi, rocking it in royal blue Rochas. And Tiffany Yep, as all courants as ever in Carvan. Le Tu Shanghai is here tonight.
6:25 p.m. I just met Virginie de Bassenet, the chic founder of Prêt Couture, who promises that we will be swooning in our seats when the fashion show starts.
Carlton Bao just walked in with a pretty girl who looks a lot like him.
Who could she be? And who is the hottie with them? Oh my God, is he that actor from the hit Korean TV series, My Love from the Star?
6:30 p.m.
It's not the guy from My Love from the Star. Turns out he's some history professor friend of Carlton's visiting from New York. How disappointing.
6:35 p.m.
Lester and Valerie Liu are standing in the gallery where some beautiful antique scrolls hang. And Valerie is sobbing on Lester's shoulder. Whatever could be wrong?
6:45 p.m.
In the garden now, where seats have been arranged along the sides of an immense reflecting pool. Could this garden actually be air-conditioned? We're in the middle of a June heat wave, and yet I feel a cold draft blowing and detect the scent of honeysuckle.
6:48
p.m. There are iPads on every seat, with a special app installed so we can view close-ups of each outfit as it comes down the runway and place our bids.
Now this is useful technology.
6:55 p.m. Everyone awaits the arrival of Colette and Pan Ting Ting. What will they be wearing?
7:03 p.m.
Colette just made her entrance, with Richie Yang rushing up to take her arm and escort her to his seat.
Are the rumors that they are back together true?
This is what Colette has on. A Dior Couture daffodil strapless gown with a striking see-through panel at the thigh, worn with ridiculously sexy red chamois heels that feature a heavily beaded snake winding around her ankles. You're reading about it here first before she has time to blog about it herself.
7:05 p.m.
Roxanne Wang, Colette's fabulous assistant, who is just killing it in a Rick Owens dark shadow black denim suit, just informed me that the beading on the snake is actually rubies. I die.
7:22 p.m.
Still waiting for Pan Ting Ting, who is more than an hour late.
We're being told that her plane has just landed from London, where she has been filming some top-secret new movie with director Alfonso Cuarón.
7:45 p.m.
Pan Ting Ting is in the house. I repeat, Pan Ting Ting is in the house.
She's sporting a high ponytail and dressed in white silk chamois jumpsuit and knee-high riding boots in distressed gray leather.
Designer names to come the moment I find out.
Jewelry. Colorful beaded African Maasai Mara tribal earrings. Not much bling factor, but who cares? She looks beyond amazing. Like she just came from a motorbike rally across the Gobi Desert.
The crowd is going crazy.
Observing the commotion on the other side of the reflecting pool, Rachel said to Carlton,
"So that's the Jennifer Lawrence of China?"
"Oh, she's a much bigger star than Jennifer. She's like Jennifer Lawrence, Giselle Bundchen, and Beyoncé put together," Carlton declared.
Rachel laughed at the analogy.
"Until tonight, I'd never heard of her."
"Trust me, you will soon. Every director in Hollywood is trying to get her in their films, because they know it will mean hundreds of millions in box office gold over here."
Pan Ting Ting stood at the entrance to the garden, as all eyes locked onto her. Every guest wanted to study the translucent marble complexion that Shanghai Vogue had likened to Michelangelo's Pietà. Those celebrated Bambi eyes and her Sophia Loren-esque curves. Ting Ting put on the beatific smile she was so famous for and scanned the crowd quickly as the first camera flashes went off.
"No surprises tonight. It's all the usual suspects."
Why did I ever agree to leave London for this event? Good exposure, my agent says. Considering that I am already on 6 magazine covers this month, why do I need more exposure? I could be enjoying that amazing butternut squash salad at Otto Lengi right now and bicycling through Notting Hill totally unrecognized, except for the Chinese tourist shopping on Ledbury Road. But here I am, being dissected like an insect under a microscope. Speaking of insects, what in Guan Yin's name is Perineum Wang wearing on her head? Don't make eye contact. Oh, look, here comes photographer Russell Wing. How does he manage to be at every party in Asia at the same time? Stephanie Shi just leaped out of her seat like an electrocuted poodle. Just watch. She's going to try to stand on my right again, so that when the photograph appears anywhere, the caption will read, Stephanie Shi and Pan Ting Ting. She always wants her name to come first. Thank God her grandfather isn't in power anymore. I hear that these days the old man has to use a colostomy bag. And of course, right behind Stephanie come two other Beijing princesses, Adele Ding and Wen Pifang. God help them. They're both wearing those bull man basket weave dresses that make them look like a pair of walking rattan chairs. The ladies greeted Ting Ting with cloying hugs and interlocked their arms around her as if they were the closest of friends, while Russell snapped his pictures.
My God, in the photo I'm going to look like the meat in a bald man sandwich. Would these Guan E Dai girls,
a Mandarin term for the children of top government officials,
have even spit in my direction 5 years ago? God, the things I do in the name of charity.
As they returned to their seats, Adele whispered to Pifang,
I tried to look for the scars on her eyelids this time. I really don't believe those huge raccoon eyes of hers can be real. The problem is, she has fake eyelashes on, and she uses very good concealer. In pictures, she appears to have very little makeup on, but in reality, she has gobs on in all the right places.
Pifang nodded.
I looked at the nose. No one's nostrils are that perfect. Ivan Kun swears that she used to be a KTV hostess in Suzhou until some tycoon there paid for her to go to Seoul to get everything redone. The plastic surgeon had to issue her one of those certificates with before and after pics because she looked nothing like her passport photo after all the bandages came off. Pihua!
Mandarin for bullshit, Tiffany Yap shot back.
Can't you just accept the fact that she was born with natural beauty? Not everyone has to go to Seoul to get their nose broken on purpose like the both of you. And Ting Ting isn't from Suzhou. She comes from Jingnan. She's very open about the fact that before Zhang Yimou discovered her, she sold makeup at an SK-II counter. Well, I'm partly right then. This is how she has access to all the best concealers, Adele declared.
Ting Ting arrived at her seat of honor between Colette and Colette's mother. She shook Mrs. Bing's hands respectfully before taking her seat, and Colette leaned in to give her a double-cheek kiss.
Colette looks fab, as always. People say she only looks good because she can afford anything on the planet, but I disagree. She's got a style that money can't buy. It's funny how the press labels us best friends, when this is maybe the fifth time I've met her.
Still, she's one of the few out of this bunch that I can actually stand. She's not predictable like the rest of them. And the way she keeps all these guys running laps around her like desperate gigolos, it's pretty damn funny. Now, I'm going to ignore the fact that Mrs. Bing just slathered on an entire bottle of hand sanitizer right after shaking my hand.
The lights in the garden suddenly went black. After a brief pause, the bamboo grove behind the reflecting pool lit up in a vibrant Eve Klein blue, while yellow-hued lights submerged deep in the water began pulsating dramatically like an airport runway. Serge Gainsbourg and Brigitte Bardot's Bonnie and Clyde began blaring on the sound system as the first model in a golden gown with a long chiffon train glided across the vast pool, appearing to magically walk on water. The crowd broke into rapturous applause. But Colette sat with her arms crossed and her head tilted appraisingly. As more models dressed in fancily embellished outfits continued to prance down the catwalk, several of the ladies in the front row started